love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
All right. I think I have unique credibility on this because I have been calling for an investigation on Donald Trump, on the White House, for the Russia thing. But I have also been calling for one on Hillary Clinton because, as I have laid out over the months, both sides are involved in this. But I have also been saying there is something wrong at the FBI and the DOJ, and it has nothing to do with Donald Trump. This has started long ago with Uranium One. They were investigating, they stifled witnesses, they did not report to Congress. Something is wrong in the DOJ and in the FBI. I am not somebody who just comes out and excuses Donald Trump for his behavior. I am clear on investigate and turn over every stone. But I will tell you now, this attitude must be taken by the other side on the FBI and the DOJ and the Clinton-Obama administration. Something is very wrong. Shady meetings in high-level offices have gone on. Off-the-books burner phones to hide communications. And whispers of what seems to be a coup. Now, this sounds like it's something that is ripped out of Jack Ryan novels. You expect this to be a movie. This is happening inside the hallowed halls of the FBI. It was reported last week that the former second-in-command of counterintelligence of the FBI had been relieved from the Mueller investigation due to a series of anti-Trump text messages. At first, to be honest, it seemed kind of worthy of an eye roll. I mean, who hasn't sent an anti-Trump text message in the office? There's probably a ton of people that you call friends that have done that. Even if you're in the president's corner, I know most of us have said, oh, geez, why is he tweeting? And that is exactly what I expected to see. But on Tuesday night, 375 of the 10,000 text messages were released to the press. Many of them, as expected, were just stupid. There's clear disdain for Trump and admiration for Hillary Clinton. But there's a big difference between having a political opinion versus showing bias in an investigation. And that is the vibe that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein was giving to Congress yesterday. And that's primarily how the mainstream media is reporting it. So that's that. Well, no. No, it's not. If you read and scan past the meaningless text, you come across three that are quite disturbing. Here's one. It says, quote, so look, you say we have to text on the phone because when we talk about Hillary, it can't be traced, end quote. That sounds pretty bad. What could they possibly be discussing about Hillary that requires them to hide their personal conversations? Maybe the fact that this FBI agent was the one who doctored Comey's Clinton statement to help her avoid an indictment? I'm guessing here, but let's read on. There is the F. Trump, yada, yada, yada. Congrats on a woman nominated for president. Okay, expected that. But then there's this. Quote, I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's office, that there's no way Trump gets elected. But I'm afraid we can't take that risk. It's like an insurance policy in the unlikely event you die before you're 40, end quote. What is that? because that sounds an awful lot like the second in command of counterintelligence, who was working on both the Clinton investigation and the Trump-Russia investigation, making plans with a colleague to undermine Donald Trump. Oh, yeah, and the office referenced in the text, Andes, was likely Deputy Director Andrew McCabe's. I'm sorry, but this is not a case of little harmless political preference. This is bias with the intent to conspire against a then presidential candidate. How far did this plot go? What were they talking about in Andy's office? What was the, quote, insurance plan? At this point, we need a special counsel. And we don't need a special counsel of Republicans. We don't need a special counsel made up of Democrats. We need a special counsel made up of Americans to investigate the entire government. What the hell is going on?
It's Thursday, December 14th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Maybe it's because I only make dire predictions that I feel this way, but I hate when my predictions come true. I hate it. There is no credibility left anywhere. I said to you a long, long time ago, you're not going to be able to believe anybody. Everything that you thought you could count on, you can't count on anymore. I want you to listen carefully to me. You will not in the future, and I mean the near future, even be able to believe your eyes or ears. Anyone who dismisses your connection, your spiritual connection to connect to the truth. Anyone who undermines that is doing you a disservice. If you are not exercising your spiritual muscles right now to be able to have discernment, if forget about praying for your country. You need to pray for discernment. Please, Lord, give me the gift of discernment because we are lost. And as you will hear by the end of today's show, you are not going to believe your eyes or your ears in short order. We have changed so much just in the last 2 months. We have gone from a country that understands due process, that we were set apart because of our due process. Nobody could just scoop you up off the streets, throw you in jail. No one could destroy your life without having the ability to defend yourself, to stand against your accuser. We have always had a justice system that portions of the population didn't trust. And quite honestly, my apologies to African Americans for dismissing the justice system and the cries against the justice system for so long. I don't believe in this white privilege bullcrap and apologizing and feeling bad for everything. However, I do believe that we all should take a stand when we discover something that we have not seen before or we didn't believe before. People have been railroaded by this justice system clearly for a long time because I, for one, question whether there is justice in the courts of our country anymore. I question how many people have been put away by false evidence because somebody just wanted either to have a good record, to be able to put them away, to be able to justify their bias? I don't know. But we used to be a country that we used to say, I would rather let people go free. I would rather let a guilty man go free than put an innocent man behind bars. That's why it is hard to find justice. Because we are supposed to err on the side of doubt. Reasonable doubt. We don't anymore. And I'm sorry. We're not throwing people in prison, but we're destroying lives. How is it we're supposed to... How is it we're supposed to judge anything when we can't question the system? We can't question the accuser? I'm kind of conflating two things here because I'm concerned about two different things. So let me be clear. I don't trust the FBI or the justice system anymore. I trust the good people of the FBI. And I think there are good people in the FBI. But I think up at the top, the system is beginning to look to me like it is rotten to the core. And I want you to know, I'm not a, you know this, but for anybody who might be a first-time listener, I am not a blind Trump supporter. I believe there is something to be found with Russia. But I believe there's something to be found with Russia and Hillary Clinton and Russia and Obama. And the only reason why I say that is because Obama was silencing somebody who had real information from the FBI and hid it from Congress. Why? Why? I believe we have so politicized ourselves that now the deep state, as we have outlined it on the television show in our chalkboard lessons, which, by the way, you can find the series on deep state and you should watch it. We have a deep state that is not like the Turkish deep state. The Turkish deep state is the one where there's star chambers, the one where there is a legitimate government that pulls all of the strings and it is coordinated. That's not the kind of deep state we have. We have a deep state of career, quote, servants. These people go on and on and on, and they think they know better than the American people. And an easy example is the State Department. But I believe we have a chance that this is now happening in our FBI again, where they think they know better. We have to trust the American people, but we have to give them all of the information. So the first concern I have is political. I don't trust this anymore. And somebody better stop playing politics and save the Republic. And the second is what's happening with our willingness to blindly believe any accusations at the peril, with not even recognizing the danger ahead and the destruction of human beings. You don't get past charges of rape, allegations. If it's rape, then let's have a trial. You don't get past these allegations that are coming out, and some of them are meaningless. But your career is destroyed. You'll never work again. How is that not a prison sentence? You can't work again. There are two stories that have come out overnight along with stories of technology that no one is paying attention to, that I'm going to tie together for you today. 2017 is a pivot point. 2017 is going to be remembered, I believe, as maybe the last year where we recognized our country at all. We're at a threshold, and we are about to enter a brave new world, and we damn well better talk about it before we walk through this door. Continue in a minute.
Glenn Beck.
We have published a really important article at glennbeck.com today that I want you to read. A journalist highlights not so obvious threat to the hashtag MeToo movement and the threat that it poses to women. And I want you to read this. This is a woman who says, look, I am not an apologist. She said, I am convinced that Roy Moore is a sexual predator, but I believe that Bill Clinton is well. And neither my certainty or anyone else's, however, shouldn't be allowed to displace the law. I may be convinced, but I also may be mistaken. These reservations aside, I am grateful at least that we agree that a rapist or a serial groper of random women's genitals should be behind bars. Now, she goes on and she says, this revolution risks going the way revolutions often do. The consequences will not just be awful for men. They will be awful for women. Caught up in the hysteria of taking down any man accused of sexual harassment, she points out that we may be missing the big picture. The reality of our newly formed society may not be enlightened, safe place where that we all have imagined that we could stand. It's possible, she warns, the fight for equality could come full circle and create a divide in the workplace. Given the events of recent weeks, we can be certain of this. From now on, men with any instinct for self-preservation will cease to speak of anything personal, anything sexual in our presence. They will make no body jokes when we are listening. They will adopt in our presence great deference to our exquisite sensitivity and frailty. Many women seem positively joyful at this prospect, but the revolution has at last been achieved. Is this the world we want? Isn't this the world we escaped? Read it now at glennbeck.com. It's a must read.
Glenn Beck.
Okay, there's a couple of stories that you need to hear today. One, Representative Dan Johnson. He is a state rep out of the state of Kentucky. He was found on a bridge over the Salt River in Greenwell Ford Drive. He was investigated for alleged sexual molestation. He died, they say, of probable suicide. Bullitt County Sheriff Donnie Tennell said Johnson drove to the bridge over the Salt River on Greenfell Road in Mount Washington, parked on the north side of it, and shot himself in front of his car. His body was found on the bank of the river just past the bridge. Just before 5 p.m., Johnson posted the following message on his Facebook page. The accusations from NPR are false. God and only God knows the truth. Nothing is the way they make it out to be. America will not survive this type of judge and jury fake news. Conservatives must take a stand. I love God and I love my wife. She's the best wife in the world. My love forever. My mom and dad, my family, and all of my five kids, nine grandchildren, two in tummies, and many more to come. Each of you are a total gift from God. Please stay strong. Rebecca needs you. 9/11/2001, New York City, WTC. PTSD, 24/7. 16 years is a sickness that will take my life. I can't handle it any longer. It has won this life. But heaven is my home. Please listen closely. There are only three things I ask you to do if you love me. One, blame no person. Satan is the accuser, so blame the devil himself. Two, forgive and love everyone, especially yourself. And three, most importantly, love God. P.S. I love my friends. You are my family. God loves all people, no matter what. The allegation was made from a woman who said it. She was 17 at the time. She was staying in an area of the Heart of Fire City Church where Johnson was a pastor. He had been drinking a lot, she said, approached her, kissed her, and fondled her under her clothes. He said that was absolutely not true. He killed himself. Now this. Story came out yesterday. PBS will no longer distribute the Tavis Smiley program following what spokesman called multiple credible allegations of sexual misconduct uncovered by a recent investigation into the late night show's host's behavior. News of the suspension of Smiley's show, produced by TS Media, an independent production company, was first reported by Variety. This investigation included interviews with witnesses as well as with Mr. Smiley. That's important. This is from PBS. As well as with Mr. Smiley. The inquiry uncovered multiple credible allegations of contact that is inconsistent with the values and standards of PBS, and the totality of this information led to today's decision.
It's never ending, man.
So I want to play just a little bit of Tavis, but I want to read the important parts of this. Here's Tavis came out last night on Facebook. Listen to this.
Hi, I'm Tavis. I was as shocked as you were to hear of PBS's sudden announcement regarding my television program. Let me say at the outset that I have the utmost respect for all women, and I certainly celebrate the courage of those women who've come forth of late to share their own truth. But let me also assure you that I have never groped, inappropriately exposed myself, or coerced any colleague in the workplace ever in my 30-year career.
He says, never, ever, ever. Now listen to this. He says, PBS launched a so-called investigation of me without even informing me. I learned of the investigation when former staffers started contacting me to share the uncomfortable experience of receiving a phone call from a stranger asking whether I had ever done anything to them that made them feel uncomfortable, and if they could provide other names of people to call. Now, what does that sound like, Stu? Does that sound familiar in our history? Can you tell me... have you done this, or has this happened to you? And can you provide me some names and numbers?
Have you, or are you now, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
And right. We demand that you right. Give us names. Mm-hmm. After 14 seasons, that's how I learned of this inquiry, from the street. Only after being threatened with a lawsuit did PBS investigators reluctantly agree to interview me for 3 hours. If having a consensual relationship with a colleague years ago is the stuff that leads to this kind of public humiliation, by the way, that's Bill O'Reilly, and personal destruction, heaven help us. PBS investigators refused to review any of my personal documentation. They refused to provide me the names of any accusers. They refused to speak to my current staff and refused to provide me any semblance of due process to defend myself against allegations from unknown sources. Their mind was made up. Almost immediately following the meeting, this story broke in Variety as an exclusive. Indeed, I learned more about these allegations reading the Variety story than the PBS investigator shared with me, the accused, in our 3-hour face-to-face meeting. My attorneys were sent a formal letter invoking contractual provision to not distribute my programming, and that was it. Simply put, PBS overreacted and conducted a biased and sloppy investigation, which led to a rush to judgment, a trampling of my reputation, which I have spent an entire lifetime trying to establish. This has gone too far, and I, for one, intend to fight back. Now, that's what he posted last night. I've met Tavis Smiley once. I have no horse in this game at all. I don't know him to vouch for him. I have friends who would vouch for him. I have plenty of people in the audience who wouldn't like him, I'm sure. But here's what's being said now on Twitter. If PBS has to walk this back, it's going to be problematic because this will be the edge case that everyone will point to. PBS can't walk this back. How about this one? Some innocent men may be caught in a crossfire of undoing the abusive history, but those men will be an extremely small minority. And while unfortunate, it's a price we have to be okay paying it. Thousands of women shouldn't continue to be doubted for the sake of a couple of powerful men. No, that should not be our standard. Our standard should be trying to find the truth. And when there is reasonable doubt, you have to say, there's doubt. How do you feel if it comes to your door and you're wrongly accused? This is wrong. We're destroying lives. And as I will show you next hour, we haven't faced anything. I'm going to show you what's coming beginning very soon. And it's going to change absolutely everything that you think you know.
Glenn Beck.
So I have to tell you, I'm uncomfortable with this next interview in some ways, and I think you'll understand once you hear what it is. But John McNaughton is an artist. He has been controversial over the last few years, but he paints these amazing paintings that tell stories of, you know, where we are as people. And he ties history and current events together. You'll recognize his paintings the minute you see them. He's just done a painting that OUR did not request. It wasn't a commission, because it's made all of us, we're really flattered, but also really uncomfortable. He's made this painting, and he has made it and donated it to raise funds to help out the stop of slavery around the world. And it is the modern day abolitionists side by side with the original abolitionists in a very powerful painting. And welcome to the program, John McNaughton. How are you, sir?
Hi, Glenn. I'm good. Thank you.
Good. I hope you don't take my... I don't know how to even explain my shyness on this as an insult. I'm honored that you would paint this and you would even think about including me in this, but it's really awkward because.
Yes, I know. Tim Ballard told me that you would feel that way.
Yeah.
But he said that 100% you had to be in the painting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you don't have the spotlight on you, but you're in there.
Yeah. So Tony Robbins is in there. Mike Tomlin from the Steelers is there. Montel Williams, Mia Love, Ashton Kutcher is there. Albert Pujols is there. Eric Metaxas. I mean, it's some of the great, really great people of our day.
And Glenn as well. Yeah, right. Glenn as well.
Yeah, I know.
So all the great people plus Glenn.
Yes. And I'm on the edge, so you can kind of airbrush me out of this. So what was your inspiration and tell me about why you did it?
Yeah, sure. Well, someone who was friends with Tim Ballard was talking with me one day about the organization, and I had never heard of it before. And as he explained it to me, you know, I had this image in my mind come where I saw this rescuer or line of rescuers, you know, carrying children walking down the tracks, you know, the Underground Railroad. And then on both sides of the tracks, you have the different abolitionists holding their lamps, you know, guiding the way. And And I was just really taken by the idea. And I thought, you know, this could actually be a project that could help the cause to save children. And, you know, I always try to do paintings that I think are going to make a difference. But this one, I mean, to save a child, it was overwhelming. And so I just started painting it. And after I'd gotten so far, my friend who knew Tim Ballard, we contacted him. And then from there, Tim gave me a lot of his suggestions of who should be in the painting.
So we have just partnered with Tim Ballard. In case you're listening and you don't know who Tim Ballard is, we just partnered him with the Nazarene Fund. We've been a partner. We raised the original money to open up, you know, Operation Underground Railroad, Rescue Our Children. It is a worldwide effort to stop slavery, and he is now the CEO of the Nazarene Fund as well. And we are going to start going in a big way next year, rescuing slaves in the Middle East, these Christians that have just been left to die by the rest of the world, to live their life in slavery. And we're going to really double down and start rescuing them next year. It's quite an amazing thing that's going on. When you were picking the original abolitionists, how did you decide who was in there?
Well, we just looked at the history of, you know, abolitionists in the past and people that had interesting stories. And, you know, talking with Tim, you know, he said, oh, you got to have this person. And, you know, some of the names I recognized, a lot of them I didn't. People like William Wilberforce, you know, I remember seeing the movie Amazing Grace, and,
yeah,
you know, his story. And,
right.
But then there was people like, there's this woman named Harriet Jacobs that I had never heard of that had this remarkable story that Tim told me about. And I mean, I think they only learned about her in the last 6-7 years, you know. And so she's in the picture, and just a lot of different stories that I just didn't know about. And, you know, they have a ebook that comes with the painting where people can learn all the details about each person in the picture and why they're there. It's pretty amazing.
So you can buy it at ourpainting.org, ourpainting.org. How many of these are you selling, or how much are they?
They start at $29, and then they go up. You can get a nice framed one, and 100% of all the profits, everything is going to rescue children. And, you know, Tim told me it takes about $2,000 to rescue a child and to help rehabilitate them and go through that process. And so we're hoping that we can just sell a lot of these prints and to rescue, you know, thousands of children if we can.
Well, I know that you left Tony Robbins in disguise, because he goes on operations in disguise, and he thanks you. I wish you would have painted a beard or something on me to disguise me a little bit as well. It's an honor to have been thought of as part of that. And I tell Tim all the time, and he hates when I say this, I do believe that they're going to build statues of him someday because of the work that he's done. He is changing. He is the modern day abolitionist for sure. And I sure appreciate your help. Thank you so much.
Yeah, John, and we really appreciate not only your efforts to help stop slavery in the world, but also your efforts to make Glenn feel uncomfortable.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, I do my best.
Yeah, well, thank you. You did a good job. John McNaughton, thank you so much. I appreciate it. You can see the painting and purchase the painting. It would be a good Christmas gift. You might want to frame it in a little bit. There's some shady characters on the outside of it. But ourpainting.org, ourpainting.org, all of the proceeds go to help rescue slaves all around the world, including the Middle East and the Nazarene Fund.
Glenn Beck.